There are 4 oxygen masks in the medical stores. We could use those. Before he could reply, Jamie heard the airlock hatch sighing open. Turning, Jamie saw Dex Trumbull step through. There you are, Trumbull said. Striding along the aisle between rows of plants, he said to Jamie, I just heard you're going to go with us on the first traverse. Is that true? As mission director, Jamie's place should have been at the base camp. But the expedition's first overland traverse was heading for Tithonium Chasma, where the lichen had been found, and Jamie had no intention of remaining in the dome while the others were in the field. You really want to come out with us? Trumbull asked, looking somewhere between amused and annoyed. Through the open hatch, Jamie could hear a country and western tune that someone was playing, plaintive guitars and nasal yearning. Jamie nodded solemnly. You bet I do. Trumbull swept an arm through the air, grinning. And give up all this luxury? I'm part Navajo, Jamie countered, making himself grin back at Dex. I'm rugged. Their base was at last in order. All systems were functioning adequately, even the toilets. Possum Craig was outside with the drilling rig, digging deeper every day, seeking samples of bacteria from the plutonium biosphere that earthbound biologists had conjectured. The backup water generator now stood less than 50 meters from the dome. The plumbing lines from both the primary and backup machines were buried underground and heavily insulated. Now that Fuchida and Trudy Hall had transferred the hydroponic garden from the ship to its own transparent dome, they could eat a completely homegrown vegetarian diet again, as they had during the long flight from Earth. There were 2 fuel generators as well. The first one, sent ahead of the explorers, still sat slightly more than 2 kilometers away. After discussing the situation with the 2 astronauts and Craig, Jamie had decided to let that one continue to serve as their backup and use the one that had landed with them as their primary fuel source. Standing in front of Jamie close enough almost to touch noses, Trumbull planted his fists and his hips and cocked his head slightly to one side. So it's going to be you, me, and Trudy, 2 geoscientists and 1 biologist. And Stacy, our driver. Safety regulations required that every field mission had to include one of the team's astronauts until each of the scientists qualified as an experienced driver. Jamie said, I'll double as her backup. I've had experience driving on Mars. Learned how to do it back on the reservation, I'll bet. With a curt nod, Jamie answered, It's a lot like Mars back there, yes. Where'd you learn to drive? Boston, said Trumbull. If you can drive in Boston, you can drive anywhere. Mars was bracketed by 3 communications satellites now, hovering above the equator in synchronous orbit, so they stayed fixed over 1 spot on the ground. One of Mars's 2 tiny moons, Deimos, no bigger than Manhattan Island, orbited almost at the synchronous altitude. Its slight gravitational pull would eventually warp the commsats out of their precise orbits, but calculations had shown that the satellites should remain stable for at least the length of the explorer's stay on the ground. So Jamie was not concerned that he, as mission director, would be away from the base for a week. He could remain in touch with the camp and with Earth through the hovering commsats. As he suited up for the 10-meter walk to the waiting rover, he saw Vijay Shekhtar step through the airlock's inner hatch and lift off her helmet. She shook her hair free, noticed Jamie, and smiled at him. I've double-checked all the supplies, she said. Everything's in place. Then we'll go for the excursion, said Jamie. Yes. She sat beside him on the bench that ran the length of the hard suit lockers and with a sigh began to pull off her gloves.
Blasted suit is chafing my right elbow roll, she complained.
Put a sponge pad on the spot, Jamie suggested. No matter how well the suits fit, there was always some discomfort. His own suit felt inordinately stiff. It would be impossible to run in it. Jamie had already gotten into the leggings and boots, the hardest part of suiting up. Now he stood and stepped over to the waiting torso.
It's like getting into a knight's armor, isn't it?
Shekhtar said. Going out to joust with the dragons, said Jamie.
Dragons? That would be news.
Real dragons, he said. Ignorance, the unknown.
Ah, yes. Real dragons, all right.
And fear.
Fear? Do you feel fear?
Not fear of going outside, Jamie explained hastily. Not fear of Mars. This world might be dangerous, but it's not malign.
She sat there encased in the heart suit like a woman being devoured by a metallic monster, and smiled curiously at Jamie.
Then what are you afraid of?
I'm not afraid, but others are. Afraid of finding things that upset them.
Such as life?
Such as intelligent life, said Jamie. Understanding lit her face.
That's why you insisted on going out on this traverse. You're cliff-dwelling.
Jamie nodded solemnly.
Do you really think you can find it?
I could walk to it if I had to.
And you really believe it's an artifact built by intelligent Martians?
Dex Trumbull came through the airlock hatch and slid up his visor. We're all set to go, soon as the mission director climbs aboard.
2 minutes, Jamie said.
Then, looking back at VJ's questioning eyes, he added, We'll find out pretty soon, won't we?
First Traverse, Sol 6.
The expedition included two large, segmented rover vehicles for overland traverses. The rovers were exactly the same as those used in the first expedition. Each was a trio of cylindrical aluminum modules mounted on springy, loose-jointed wheels that could crawl over fair-sized rocks without upsetting the vehicle. They represented a considerable financial saving for the expedition. The cost of developing and testing them had already been absorbed by the first expedition. The second expedition merely had to order two more of them to be built. One of the cylindrical modules was the fuel tank, big enough to keep the vehicle out in the field for 2 weeks or more. The middle segment usually held equipment and supplies, although it could be modified to serve as a small mobile laboratory if needed. The front segment, largest of the three, was about the size of a city bus. It was pressured like a spacecraft so people could live in it in their shirt sleeves. There was an airlock at its rear where it linked with the second module. Its front end was a bulbous transparent canopy which made the entire assembly look something like a giant metallic caterpillar. Each rover was designed to carry 4 in reasonable comfort, although the entire complement of 8 explorers could be squeezed into one in an emergency. Even bundled inside the cumbersome hard suit and sitting uncomfortably in the right-hand seat of the rover's cockpit, Jamie felt free. He watched the Martian landscape rolling past in a sort of double vision, his trained geologist's eye cataloging the landforms, the boulders and craters and wind-sculpted sand dunes, his deeper Navajo mind recognizing territory that might have once been home to the people. How like the desert homeland of the people, he thought. Rusty sand and red rocks, steep-walled mesas off by the horizon. He almost expected to see footprints out there, the trail of his ancestors.
Nonsense, his Anglo mind scoffed. There's not a blade of grass within 100 million kilometers of here. The temperature out there is below zero, and tonight it'll drop to 100 and more below. You can't breathe the air.
Still, Jamie felt as if he had returned home. And farther along out there, built into a cleft in the mighty cliff wall of the Grand Canyon, there waited the ruins of an ancient city. Jamie felt certain of that. No matter what the others said, no matter what the rational side of his own mind insisted, he knew in his heart that what he had seen on the first expedition had been built by intelligent creatures.
30 clicks, said Stacy Dejerova.
Sitting in the driver's seat beside Jamie, she too was encased in a bulky hard suit, although she had not put on her helmet. With her dirty blonde pageboy, she looked like a chunky Dutch woman being swallowed alive by a robot. Jamie nodded and pushed himself awkwardly out of the seat. He had to bend slightly to get out of the bulbous glassed cockpit without scraping his helmet on the overhead. He clomped past Trudy Hall, sitting in her tan coveralls in the midsection of the rover's module. She smiled up at him. The rover slowed to a smooth stop. Jamie hardly felt it. Dejerova was an excellent pilot. Trumbull was standing by the airlock hatch with one of the beacon rods already in his hand. Jamie took it from him silently. Later on, Dex would suit up and do the outside work, but Jamie wanted to be the first to go outside.